From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The European Union's ambassador to Venezuela has been ordered out of the country following the imposition Monday of sanctions by the EU against a number of government officials in the Bolivarian Republic. The announced sanctions were placed against a dozen deputies of the National Assembly, as well as military and other high-ranking officials in Caracas. During a televised speech from the capital Monday, Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro announced that the EU ambassador in Caracas, Isabel Brillante Pedros, had 72 hours to leave.
The European Union today issued a resolution where the supremacist European Union applies new sanctions to those Venezuelans who, as part of our state institutions, defend the Constitution, and sanctions the Board of Directors of the Opposition National Assembly because that Board of Directors has refused to follow the orders of the European Union Embassy in Caracas.
Maduro described the sanctions as an example of, quote, the greatest colonial, interventionist, and supremacist tradition, closed quote.
Enough is enough. That's why I have decided to give the ambassador of the European Union in Caracas 72 hours to leave our country. And I demand respect from the European Union. Enough European colonialism against Venezuela. Stop the persecution against Venezuela.
He also called it a, quote, attitude inherited from the old and disgusting European colonialism that filled the continents of America, Africa, and Asia with slavery, death, and destruction, closed quote. It's been more than seven decades since the modern architecture of the U.S. national security state was established with the passage of the 1947 National Security Act. Enacted as the powers that be were rolling out the Cold War with Russia and beginning the process of occupying most of the planet with hundreds of military bases, the legislation created at least two of the leading institutions within the so-called intelligence community: the National Security Agency, and the Central Intelligence Agency. Roe Ruttenberg filed this report with China's global television network, CGTN, looking at the legal structure of the national security state and asking why member institutions have been such a source of controversy over the years.
In the wake of World War II and on the brink of the Cold War, then U.S. President Harry Truman initiated a major reshuffling of America's security institutions. He signed the National Security Act of 1947, consolidating Washington's military leadership. The act also created a National Security Council to advise the president and a Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, to gather intel abroad.
It mostly worked until it didn't. Half a century later, U.S. intel failed to prevent the terror attacks of 9/11. Thousands of Americans died on U.S. soil. President George Bush launched an invasion abroad, and at home he put his pen to work, signing that same year the Patriot Act.
We had the threat of catastrophic terrorism at the hands of radical Islamist organizations that really had not been factored into national security law or strategy in the United States.
Providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism, PATRIOT. The act included the first of many changes to U.S. surveillance laws, changes critics say that made it easier for Washington to spy on ordinary Americans. The following year, another act combined 22 different federal departments and agencies into one unified entity, coined the Department of Homeland Security. The new cabinet-level department became one of America's biggest and most powerful. The DHS would largely focus on federal preparedness for terrorism, but its duties would quickly cross over into border security and customs, drawing calls for its scope to be scaled back.
I don't know anyone who would assert that the system here is perfect. We're constantly striving to perfect it.
The motion is agreed to.
In 2015, the USA Freedom Act reauthorized most of the Patriot Act. It limited the collection of metadata, namely phone logs and banking records, by the National Security Agency, but extended Washington's legal cover for almost everything else.
The debate is still going on today as to whether or not there should be a Department of Homeland Security 19 years later. And what do you do about FISA? What do you do about wiretapping and the like? And how do you deal with private companies that are collecting data, and to what extent should that data be surrendered over to the government when there's a national security concern?
It's unlikely November's presidential election will usher in any reforms. Many of the more recent changes to America's security strategy were drafted by Republicans and upheld, even enforced, by Democrats. Roe Ruttenberg in Washington.
At her press conference Monday, White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany was questioned again about media claims that Russia paid bounties to Taliban fighters to kill American soldiers in Afghanistan and that President Trump knew about it. McEnany was also grilled about statues, Confederate flags, face masks, and the RNC this summer. We bring you that press conference in its entirety as time will allow.
Hello, everyone. Law and order are the building blocks to the American dream. But if anarchy prevails, this dream comes crumbling down. Anarchy in our streets is unacceptable, and anger is not enough. You have a president committed to action. The DOJ has arrested over 100 anarchists for rioting and destruction of federal property. The DOJ has also charged 4 men in federal court for attempting to tear down the statue of Andrew Jackson in Lafayette Square. The FBI has over 200 open domestic terrorism investigations ongoing. AG Barr has created a task force on violent anti-government extremists led by the U.S. Attorney's Office in New Jersey and the U.S. Attorney's Office in Northern Texas. With 200 Trump-appointed judges confirmed, the rule of law will be upheld. Democrats at all levels, federal, state, and local, have done nothing. Senate Democrats blocked bipartisan police reform. Minnesota's Democrat governor failed to urgently deploy the National Guard. It took President Trump for that to eventually happen, his suggestion and the ultimate descendants into chaos there in Minneapolis. 3 Democrat Minneapolis council members voted to abolish the police while they themselves were getting a private security detail. That's quite rich. Democrat mayor of Seattle called the CHOP zone, the autonomous zone, the summer of love. It is anything but that, with 1 dead, multiple shootings, and desperate pleas for help unanswered by business owners and others. 11 people were shot in 12 hours this weekend in the Democrat-run New York City, and 61 people were shot in Democrat-run Chicago, and 15 fatally killed, a Democrat state, a Democrat city. President Trump stands against defunding our brave police officers, caving to mob rule, and cancel culture, which seeks to erase our history. Let's be clear. The rampant destruction of statues is not a part of any ideology, but this anarchy is aided by failed Democrat leadership. And as President Trump has tweeted, these statues, quote, are great works of art, but all represent our history and heritage, both the good and the bad. It is important for us to understand and remember, even in turbulent and difficult times, and to learn from them. So let's stand for law and order, for peace in our streets, and against anarchy. This is President Trump's vision for the future. And with that, I'll take questions.
Kristen. Thank you, Kayleigh. I know you said that President Trump was never briefed on these reports about the Russian bounties and whatnot, but can you say that he was briefed today?
Look, I'll say this, that the U.S. receives thousands of reports a day on intelligence, and they are subject to strict scrutiny. While the White House does not routinely comment on alleged intelligence or internal deliberations, the CIA director, NSA, National Security Advisor, and the chief of staff can all confirm that neither the president nor the vice president were briefed on the alleged Russian bounty intelligence.
But has he been since briefed, since all of these reports came out?
So let me back up and say this, that there is no consensus within the intelligence community on these allegations. And in effect, there are dissenting opinions from some in the intelligence community with regards to the veracity of what's being reported, and the veracity of the underlying allegations continue to be evaluated.
And one more question, if I could. Is he upset that this intelligence was reportedly shared with the British government, but not him?
I have no further comment on that other than to just point you back to the two assertions that I made previously.
Kristen. Thank you, Kaylee. How could the president not be briefed on the Russia bounty story? Was he out of the loop by his own intelligence community?
No, as I noted, there was not a consensus among the intelligence community. And in fact, there were dissenting opinions within the intelligence community, and it would not be elevated to the president until it was verified.
President Trump tweeted overnight, "Intel just spoke to me." What specifically does that mean? Who spoke to him? Did that person, in fact, give the president a full briefing in that conversation?
So I have no further details on the president's private correspondence.
Tell us, who's coming to the White House today and who's going to brief those lawmakers?
So what I can tell you about that is that last night, the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, called both Senator McConnell and Congressman Hoyer and said that he would be briefing eight members from the committees of jurisdiction. So there was a bipartisan invitation extended, but no further details other than
that. Is that briefing going to happen today, Kaylee?
Yes, it was ongoing at the time when I came out here, or at least it had started, I think, 30 minutes prior to me coming out here.
But they're going to come to the White House? I just want to be clear about what's happening. Members of Congress have come or coming to the White House?
Yes. Caitlin.
Okay, I have two questions. One, isn't it concerning that there was even a hint of credibility to this report that the Russians were offering to pay Taliban-linked militants to kill American troops, and the president was not told about it? Has the National Security Advisor or anyone explained why they didn't think it rose to the level that the Commander-in-Chief should find out about it?
So intelligence is verified before it reaches the President of the United States, and in this case, it was not verified. I would note this, though. When the president, there's no stronger advocate for our servicemen and women than President Trump. He never hesitates to act when there is a threat to our servicemen and women. For example, in Syria in 2018, when dozens of Russian mercenaries were killed in retaliatory defensive U.S.-led strikes. So when our adversaries have directly targeted U.S. or coalition partners, the president has not hesitated to act, but this was not briefed up to the president because it was not, in fact, verified.
So I understand has to be verified, but not everything in his daily briefings or in the presidential daily brief that's the written document is airtight. They let the president know about what they are hearing. That's why it's intelligence. So why would that not have been something that rose to that level if, you know, we're sharing it with other countries?
The National Security Council and the intelligence community constantly evaluate intelligence reports, and they brief the president as necessary.
Okay, so my other question is, if this does be borne out to where the president believes that it is true, what is he going to do to hold Russia accountable? And is he still going to invite Vladimir Putin to the G7, G8, whatever he's thinking of having in the fall?
I won't speculate on whether this intelligence is verified or not verified, and I won't get ahead of the president on further actions, but I would just point out that no one—
officials are not disputing that this is not true.
No one—
there,
there are dissenting opinions within the intelligence community, and I can confirm with you right now that there's no consensus within the intelligence community on these allegations. And further, I would just point out, I won't get ahead of the president on actions, but with regard to Russia, this president has been extremely strong on Russia, imposing sanctions on hundreds of Russian individuals, expelling dozens of diplomats, closing two Russian consulates, withdrawing from an INF treaty, and several other actions.
In the intelligence community.
I have no further notifications for you other than to tell you there's no consensus and there are dissenting opinions from some within the intelligence community.
You don't think this report is true?
I'm telling you this, that there's no consensus in the intelligence community and that the dissenting opinions from some in the intelligence community exist. Darlene.
Thank you, Kelly. I wanted to go back to the tweet the president tweeted yesterday and then removed. This morning you said that he didn't hear the phrase white power in the portion of the video, and that when it was signaled to him that that was there, he took the tweet down. So does the president retweet other people's tweets and videos without knowing the full contents of what he's retweeting?
No, he did not hear that particular phrase when he tweeted out the video. And
did he listen to the video before retweeting it?
He did, and he did not hear that particular phrase.
Also, given your opening, do you have any comment on Mississippi taking steps to remove the Confederate emblem from the state flag?
I would say that that's a decision for Mississippi to make, and it's commendable that they took this action in a lawful manner and took the appropriate steps rather than trying to tear down statues and monuments.
Yeah. Thanks, Kaylee. One follow-up on the Russia and then one on another issue. Does the president have a specific message for Moscow given these reports?
a specific message for Moscow? No, because he has not been briefed on the matter. As I noted, there's no consensus among the intelligence community, and there are, in fact, dissenting opinions.
All right. And on a separate issue, Jacksonville, Florida today apparently is issuing a mask order. That, of course, is where the at least part of the RNC will be held later this summer. Has the president's thinking about wearing a mask changed at all, given that order and given the increased coronavirus cases in Texas, Florida, Arizona, and elsewhere?
So I talked to the president before coming out here. It's his choice to wear a mask. It's the personal choice of any individual as to whether to wear a mask or not. He encourages people to make whatever decision is best for their safety. But he did say to me he has no problem with masks and to do whatever your local jurisdiction requests of you. Yes.
Thanks, Kaylee. There have been reports that some American service members actually were killed as a result of this Russian bounty. What information do you have on that?
Look, again, I'm pointing you back to the fact that there's no consensus within the intelligence community. And I would also note that for those of you that are always taking the New York Times at their word, they erroneously reported that the president was briefed on this. He was not briefed on this, and neither was the vice president. So before buying into full-fledged a narrative from the New York Times that falsely stated something about the president, that you would wait for the facts to come out. And note, once again, there's no consensus in the intel community, and in fact, there are dissenting opinions from some within it.
But
you say that he wasn't briefed. Does that mean it wasn't in the PDB either?
He was not personally briefed on the matter. That is all I can share with you today, is that both the CIA director, the National Security Advisor, and the Chief of Staff can all confirm neither the president or the vice president was briefed.
Okay, I have a coronavirus question as well,
sure.
Please. Secretary Azar said that the window is closing. Cases are on the rise. This is a very serious time. Obviously, the vice president held a briefing on Friday. What is the president's message to the American people, and why aren't we seeing him publicly talk to the public, encourage them to do things to stay safe?
I would note that there is a whole coronavirus task force briefing on Friday where all of these questions that the American public had were addressed. We're encouraged to see that fatalities are coming down, that this Sunday, I believe, we had our lowest fatality rate since, I believe it was March 22nd, so late March. What that signals to us is we're catching people in the communities. The people who are being infected tend to be those, as Vice President Pence has noted, half of those testing positive are under the age of 35. This means we're catching people in their communities. We're aware that there are embers that need to be put out, but these signs of a decreasing fatality, increased and enhanced therapeutics that we've identified, four of them, dexamethasone, convalescent plasma, and remdesivir, and one other, that they are working. Remdesivir in particular reduces hospital time by a third. So these things make us uniquely equipped to handle the increase in cases that we've seen. Yes, Brian.
Kaylee, there's a national conversation going on right now about the proper place of symbols of the Confederacy, statues, memorials, names, and the president has repeatedly inserted himself into this debate. And I think a lot of people are trying to understand what his view of memorializing the Confederacy is and the proper place of the Confederate flag. So a couple questions. One, does President Trump believe that it was a good thing that the South lost the Civil War? And then two, is he interested in following NASCAR's example and banning the Confederate flag at his own events?
Well, your first question is absolutely absurd. He's proud of the United States of America. Second, with regard to our statues, Americans oppose tearing down our statues. There is a Harvard-Harris poll released just last week that shows 60% of respondents said the statues should remain, and 71% said local governments should block groups from physically destroying the statues. So he stands on the side of preserving our history.
The question is actually about the Confederate flag at his rallies. Is he interested in banning the Confederate flag at his rallies?
That would be a question for his campaign. But look, this president's focused on taking action, on fixing problems. It's why he had his executive order just a few weeks ago to keep our streets safe and secure. That's where his focus lies. And I think that those who are tearing down statues, they do appear to have no ideology when they're tearing down statues and defacing statues of Matthias Baldwin, an abolitionist, Hans Christian Hegg, who died fighting for the Union Army during the Civil War, a memorial for African-American soldiers who fought in the Civil War was damaged in Boston, and a monument to fallen police officers was vandalized in Sacramento. This is unacceptable. It's why the president took strong action. It's why he has an executive order saying those tearing down statues will be punished to the fullest extent of the law. It's why four people will charge. He will not stand for lawlessness and chaos. He stands with the 71% of Americans who say there is no place for tearing down statues, as these anarchists are doing across the nation. Christian.
That's okay to display the Confederate flag at his events.
Christian.
Yeah, thanks, Kaylee. I got a couple. First off, the president's been talking about this big infrastructure push. I'm curious if we're ever going to get a look at the proposal that DOT has been working on. And then secondly, curious if you could give us a little info on how the phase four negotiations are going. Do you get a sense that Congress is open to the back-to-work bonus that the president said he's in favor of?
I don't have any updates for you on phase four or infrastructure, but the president has mentioned for the last 3 years, he's very keen on Democrats coming to the table and working with us on infrastructure. He's keen on in a phase four, seeing a payroll tax holiday, which helps low-wage workers and those who need it most. These are real effective measures that could help the American people, but the onus is really on Democrats to come to the negotiating table.
Well, is there any indication that this is going to be different than infrastructure in February? I mean, that was roundly denounced by all the Democrats.
Yeah, I won't get ahead of the president or those negotiations. Stephen.
Thank you. I have two questions. First, about the statues. I covered pretty closely the Trump inauguration rioting trials, and those all ended in essentially jury nullification, and no one was convicted. And I was wondering if President Trump is concerned about the possibility that the same will happen with the people who were charged before for trying to topple the Jackson statue, particularly given his personal role helping apprehend suspects.
Look, that'll be a decision for the courts to make and for juries to make, but the president is very keen on seeing these actions brought to justice, because tearing down American monuments and defacing federal property and defacing the Lincoln Memorial are not things the American public want to see, as noted with that 71% poll.
Got it. And yeah. My second question is, over the weekend, President Trump retweeted a contrast of his presidency and President Obama's, and there was a chart of the different things that President Obama did and President Trump did, and one of the differences was President Obama approving the extrajudicial killings of Americans overseas. There was a little bit of confusion earlier in President Trump's presidency about his position on that. Are you able to clarify whether he opposes that?
Look, I would just say this. The president will always point to the difference between his record and that of President Obama, which is what he was getting at with his tweet. You had, on one hand, the Obama-Biden presidency, the weakest economic recovery since World War II. With President Trump, we got to the hottest economy in modern history. With President Trump, you saw ISIS defeated. With Vice President Biden and President Obama, the so-called JV team of ISIS became the varsity team and overran two separate countries. So the president will always draw contrast with President Obama, and those are just two of the many, and he was drawing a contrast in that tweet. Blake.
Thanks, Kaylee. I have two questions on COVID-19. First off, remdesivir, we found out today the pricing of it going forward for roughly a five-day trial, $2,300 for government-backed programs, $3,100 in the commercial marketplace. Does the White House, does President Trump approve of that pricing, of that price point, considering there's been some criticism as to whether or not that's too high?
So, Blake, that's a really good, important and substantive question that I think deserves a good answer to. And first, the wholesale acquisition costs, or the federal supply schedule, is about $3,200 for a course of remdesivir. But remdesivir is an inpatient drug done by infusion. And because it is an inpatient drug, the patient would be very unlikely to see the cost of the drug and to pay the cost of the drug, because the the way that hospitals get reimbursed for inpatient drugs is that they are paid flat fees for admission. And as Secretary Azar explained to me, this means in layman terms that hospitals have to eat the cost of treatment used. But if they buy remdesivir for, let's say, $3,200, which is the wholesale acquisition cost, and that remdesivir drug saves that patient time in the hospital, they only spend a third of the time in the hospital as a patient without remdesivir, that would mean that the hospitals are actually profiting because they're getting the patient out early. So that basically all comes down to saying that the patient will not see that cost.
With the price point.
Right.
And then secondly, just picking up what Jeff had asked about masks, you said the president had no problem with masks and that individuals should do whatever their local jurisdiction requests. However, the HHS Secretary Alex Azar said this weekend, quote, "We've got to practice social distancing. We've got to use face coverings when we can't practice social distancing." So if individuals are going into an area and social distancing cannot be practiced, should they listen to the local jurisdiction in which face masks might not necessarily be mandated, or should they listen to the HHS secretary who says wear a face mask?
So the CDC guidelines are they are recommended but not required, and the president would encourage everyone to follow the orders of their local jurisdiction and CDC guidelines.
Thank you. So one question follow-up and then a separate issue. I just want to be clear, there are congressional leaders who are being briefed on the Russia situation, but the president has still not been briefed on the situation?
Look, this has been asked and answered. The president is briefed on verified intelligence.
And how does he know, if he hasn't been briefed, how is he certain that Russia didn't put out these bounties?
The president is briefed on verified intelligence, and again, I would just point you back to the absolutely irresponsible decision of the New York Times to falsely report that he was briefed on something that he, in fact, was not briefed on. And I really think that it's time for the New York Times to step back and ask themselves why they've been wrong, so often. The New York Times falsely claimed Paul Manafort asked for polling data to be passed along to Oleg Deripaska before having to issue a correction. In June of 2017, the New York Times falsely wrote all 17 intel agencies had agreed on Russian interference before having to issue a correction, that it was only four agencies. In 2017, February of that year, New York Times published a story claiming Trump campaign aides had repeated contacts with Russian intelligence, which even James Comey has said was almost entirely wrong, New York Times. New York Times published a column in March of 2019 by a former Times executive editor that asserted the Trump campaign in Russia had an overarching deal that the quid of help in the campaign against Hillary for the quo of a new pro-Russian foreign policy. That's what we call the Russia hoax, which was investigated for 3 years with taxpayer dollars before ultimately getting an exoneration in the Mueller report. It is inexcusable, the failed Russia reporting of the New York Times. And I think it's time that the New York Times and also the Washington Post hand back their Pulitzers.
There's been a long tradition of uprising among dissatisfied groups in the United States that appears to be about to bring change and ends up fizzling out into reforms that go nowhere. A recital of some of this history and a caveat from inside the prison walls brought to us by political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal.
For years, indeed, for decades, we have seen the mirage of reform being presented by neoliberal leaders and their media tools, only to awake too late to ghoulish nightmares of shattered promises and hopes betrayed. For reform is betrayal, a devil's bargain of better days to come that only brings worse days. Today, the nation shocked by the savagery of George Floyd's curbside execution for all the world to see. Just 5 years ago, politicians claiming themselves progressive sold illusions of police body cameras as some kind of solution. But George Floyd, not to mention Rayshard Brooks, put the nail in that coffin. For it meant nothing when it came to changing cop behavior. Today's reformers in Congress promise much, but they can and will deliver little but new illusions. Reforms are but reformulations of old promises, of old wine in new bottles, of things to come that never make it. For that is the nature of capitalist society. New items to sell that end up producing new problems. New days need new ways of thinking. They need creativity. They need deep change that truly transforms not discussions, but relationships. And who will dare say that this miserable present is awash in outright oppression? Not the lie of service, but truly repression, suppression, and oppression. New oppressive systems can only bring more of the same. To quote Dr. Huey P. Newton, founder of the Black Panther Party, we want freedom, not another reform. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.